الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله إلا الله الله يا الله والله أكبر.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. While Muslims and the heads of the Islamic states claim to be Muslim and follower of the Prophet of Islam, we see there is no similarity and no relationship between these heads of states and Islam. Claims are numerous, claims are there. The manners and deeds of the Prophet should be emulated. What the lifestyle of the Prophet was like and what your lifestyle are like. How do you live among people? How did the Prophet treat the oppressed people? How do you deal with the oppressed people? How did the Prophet treat the arrogant powers? How was the superficial situation of the Prophet's life? What about you? Merely claiming to be follower is not sufficient. Heads of Islamic states are all like this. Prophet advised Muslims to be united. You disperse them.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, this is Ali and we're going to talk about one of the statements of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and Imam's viewpoints with regard to the government and the importance of the governments and the goals of the governments. Imam rahmatullah alayh says, in the Islamic government, perhaps this understanding between the people and government and the nation is at the top of our agenda. This quote from Imam rahmatullah alayh is very important because, again, he is focusing on the relationship between people and the government, the nation and the government. If this relation is going to be weakened, the government would fail and would fall and collapse. In an Islamic worldview, the Islamic ruler is being backed and supported by the people. We have the case of Imam Ali alayhi salam, that he was the infallible Imam of his time, but he was not the leader. He was not as the leader of the government for some time because he received people's acceptability very late. Though he was Imam of the Ummah, Imam of the society, but he was not in the place of the leader of the government and the head of the government.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
صلى الله عليه
صل
يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله.
In Islamic viewpoint, the government is going to help and bring justice for the deprived people of the society and struggle against domination and arrogance. So as we said earlier, one of the goals of the establishment of Islamic government is to bring justice and to refrain domination and arrogance among the people. Also, all of these statements of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh should be interpreted in this worldview, that he is looking at the government of the Holy Prophet. While the Holy Prophet received the acceptability by the people, he actually announced his revolution and his uprising, and he established his government. And two very beautiful models of governments, that is the city-state of Medina at the time of the Holy Prophet, and later on by Imam Ali alayhi salam. That this government valued the viewpoint of the people, valued the respect and the emphasis that was given to the votes and views of the people in all aspects of their governments. Thank you very much, dear brothers and sisters, for listening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illa.
diverse range of programs. Spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to a new episode of your favorite youth station. I hope you're doing well. Well, this is Asma, and guess what? Brother Muzaffar isn't here.
Yeah, that's me. I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Assalamu
alaikum, everybody. Thank you for having me. You didn't do the choo-choo-ka-choo. I don't get it.
Yes, of course, we did it in your place.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. But now that I'm back, we still need to have that. Choo-choo-ka-choo. It's a youth station for you. Am I still a youth? Of course you are. Thank you.
If I am considered youth, then you are youth as well.
Alhamdulillah. So there's loads of things that I don't want to use the word addicted to, but really, really like, you know.
Isn't it habit?
I had bad habits when I was younger.
Shall we use them simultaneously?
Interchangeably. Interchangeable, I guess.
But it seems like addiction is more chronic.
Sister Asma wanted to enter this discussion very surreptitiously, very subtly, very quietly. She wanted to sneak up on you guys, but I was like, bang, we're talking about addiction.
I wanted to make it more relatable, but then you just went directly into the heart
sorry.
Of
please,
the
please.
Issue.
When you're an adult, you have all this freedom. You are now the controller of your own destiny. Your parents did their part in trying to, you know, discipline you and stuff. But at the end of the day, you're an adult. You're married. You have kids and stuff. And it comes into your hands, right? That control.
I wouldn't say so. Because when you just grow older, then you don't have freedom. You think you're free, but then you don't have. Because unconsciously, you have to think about many things. Then you have to decide accordingly. So
yeah, but you're deciding, right?
You don't see it, but you are in a special border.
Kind of.
Yeah, you're restricted.
You're restricted, but if you decide to be restricted, and I'm not saying that that restriction is a bad thing. It's a good thing.
No, it's life. You know, life restricts you. Now, as an adult, you just are restricted by. The people around you, responsibilities you have.
I get that. No. But what I mean is, for example, when I was a kid, if I wanted to have ice cream before dinner, my parents would just say no. And I had no way of having that ice cream. Now, I can have ice cream before dinner. And so, nobody's going to stop me. I don't, obviously, because I understand that that's not healthy. But technically, I could if I wanted to, right?
Yes.
And I could feed my kids ice cream before dinner as well.
But you don't, because as I told you, just you grow older and you have some restrictions. Unconsciously, you have to act accordingly.
Yes.
So just let's forget about that. Yep. We're talking about addiction. So how getting...
It goes hand in hand. Because look...
How come? Then explain more.
You have to restrict yourself is what I'm getting at. You get it?
About addiction, yes. And what if I'm the type of a person who cannot restrict herself?
Then you are...
lost.
You, yeah, God help you, you know? you won't be able to survive. You won't be able to actually reach your best potential. Mm-hmm. There are so, especially in America, there are so many game addicts, video game addicts. I want to use the example. There's obviously drug addicts and alcoholism is rampant and all the rest of it. Yeah. But I wanted to use an example that is more relevant to us. We all play. Do you play video? You don't play video games, do you?
No, I don't play.
Okay. But I mean, it's something halal, right?
Yeah.
But even that can be something that you get severely addicted to the point where, you know, there are people who do not leave their rooms to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, they are that addicted and they're just completely absorbed into that world.
Yeah.
And that's all they can think about anymore.
So I don't play, but I have seen people who are just like this.
About
they're too
what?
Much addicted about games,
uh-huh. So, yeah, I mean, okay, now other addictions. Let's talk about less severe addictions.
Because listening to music.
I'm going to just throw this idea out there. Every addiction is harmful.
Of course, addiction.
Except for addiction to God, addiction to the Quran. I don't see how that could be harmful. Addiction to good things is not. But every addiction to other than Allah is definitely harmful. So
because it is answering your desires.
Yeah, caffeine.
In an excessive way.
Caffeine.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to caffeine. I think I'm addicted to caffeine because I have to have it every day.
Yes, you're addicted then.
And I just dropped my coffee and I asked the producer to get me another coffee.
I hope you would have another one.
Inshallah. But, you know, I assume that that's not going to be harmful, but actually it is. In the long term, it does affect you and it does harm you. Every addiction is bad.
Well, I'm not sure that the audience would have the same idea.
Go ahead.
You know, as I just told you, for the person who's too much addicted to his or her own a life story, and then as an adult, as you just were talking about, I feel like I'm free to do everything I want. And then I can prioritize my pleasures in the way I want to do. You know, the word I is just highlighted in there. And then I feel like watching movies or listening to music or just going the way
you're
I
want. Free, sister. Alhamdulillah. For that, you don't have an addiction as far as I can see, inshallah. You don't, right? But
I'm just talking about myself. I'm talking about the people whom I see around myself.
You said a very key thing there, which was, I can do what I want to do, right?
Yeah.
That is something that addicts don't have. See, people think that...
So wouldn't they think that I am free to drink alcohol?
No, they're no longer free. And that's the saddest thing about it. When people get addicted to something, whatever it might be, you know, drugs or alcohol or
halal addictions
like video games or caffeine or whatever it is, there comes a point in the addict's life where they no longer enjoy that thing that they love. They actually hate that thing.
Yeah.
But they're addicted to it. They have to have it. Like, and let's go back to the example of drugs, right? The first time somebody takes a hit of heroin, it gives them so much pleasure, they cannot believe it. It's unimaginable, right? But the second time, they need to have a little bit more to have that same first experience. The third time, a little bit more. The third, fourth time, it keeps on increasing. Same with other drugs, until they just either overdose and die on it, or they are no longer feeling any pleasure from it, but they still feel like they have to have it. Otherwise,
something is compelling them toward that thing.
Now, when you're addicted, because I've gone through this, and I'm sure a lot of people out there have gone through this as well. When you're addicted to something like a video game, like something like movies or binge watching videos or whatever, there comes a point where you're no longer enjoying it. It's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You actually hate it.
So now, before we get addicted to this episode, let's go for a break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station, our loyal audience. Well, I am Asma, and here with me I have Brother Muzaffar. I have the pleasure to be with him. Of course, we're having a beautiful discussion. I guess it's so relatable to every single one out there. We're talking about addiction, which is a common thing nowadays, I guess, because we're all addicted to special sort of things.
We're the generation of instant gratification. How can we not get addicted when you've got, you know, everything at the click of a button? I can go shopping right now, you know, just by going online.
Yeah, you mentioned a very beautiful addiction. Shopping is another addiction.
Things, yeah.
But it depends on your pocket, you know. Your pocket is going to restrict you.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, I think we should start talking about some solutions, though. How do you, because we talked about the pros and cons of addiction.
Yeah, yeah. And I told you, the first step is recognition.
Recognition?
Yeah. How so? I have to know that I am addicted to something. When I just take my cell phone in my hand and just start scrolling and I think like I'm not doing anything abnormal, even sitting there idle and then doing this scrolling thing for 3 hours, not knowing that time is just flying.
Yeah.
Life is moving and you're just unaware of your lifetime that is.
So it's about building a kind of sense of consciousness.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Become aware of the fact that you are addicted to something.
You know, like the Quran, it says, فَأَيْنَ تَذْهَبُونَ? Where are you going?
Yeah.
Very simple. It's just one verse. Where are you going? To stop and just check, well, what am I doing with my time? What am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie, by the way? What's it called? Soul. Disney, Pixar movie. It's really good. You should watch it.
So but I would watch
I won't
that,
spoil it for you, but it's a really good film, and I think it would...
You know, since I'm addicted to watching movies, then when I have to study for exams or whatever, then I put my laptop just far away from myself.
You are
and
really
I put
lucky.
It in a bag in order not to get the temptation to go toward
You're a really good student. Do you know what? I do the opposite. So when exam season comes really close, I bring my laptop closer to me and I just start doing anything at all to procrastinate.
You get that mental support from the thing you're addicted to.
Yeah. And I can start writing the most fascinating stories. I can start playing the video games. I can build like these cities and castles in civilization games and stuff. Procrastination happens right when you when you need to do the exam and then you just want to escape from everything.
You can do every single thing except to study.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Do you experience that then?
Of course.
Yeah,
I'm a human being and I experience things like other people.
Thank you for being honest. And that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is when your addictions will kick in most, because when you're suffering some kind of stress or even the illusion of stress, you will want some sort of pleasure to fall back on. That's why smokers will smoke more, drink.
So as for me, just as I was giving you an example, when the temptation comes toward me and it just is so hard to fight it, I try to change my position and I try to force myself that, okay, if you finish this for 2 hours, then you can have a quarter of an hour to go for the thing that you like. You know what I mean? I reward myself.
That's really nice. That's good. I wish I could do that. I don't do that. I just tend to do that thing that I want to do. That's the problem.
You just give in.
It's not so much for me. It's about changing what you desire, right? If you're desiring the wrong things, there's something wrong with you. You know, fix the desire itself.
And you know, I have another habit as well. There's another habit as well. Whenever I see that I wish something very much hard, then I go against whatever my wish is.
That's really noble.
Is it?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, it's about fighting your nerves, right? For me, it's like, okay, if I fight my nerves here, my nerves is going to win. So what I have to do is go back a few levels, a few steps, and change my desire in the first place. Why do I desire that thing? Either it's bad for me and I desire it because I'm stupid, in which case I should change that desire, or I desire it because it's good for me and I should have it, therefore I just have it.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice. You put it just so simple.
Right? The Ma'asumeen alayhimus salam, the infallible imams alayhimus salam, when they were asked, how can you be Ma'asum? How can you be free of all these sins? One of the imams, he pointed to a corpse on the ground and it had all maggots and flies buzzing around it. He said, look at this corpse. Would you eat this corpse? And the guy said, no, absolutely. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
The imam said, look, sins look like that to us. Meaning that their perspective was actually different.
Yeah.
It wasn't that, you know, if Prophet Yusuf was in a room with Zulayqa, he would actually desire her. No. He just knew that that was not his thing. You know, his perspective was different.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when they're fasting, their perspective, they do feel hunger, yes. But at the same time, they don't desire food in a strange way.
So now the moral of whatever we're just saying in here is that we should have this self-control. And I guess if we practice, we can achieve that. And I'm so sure that we can still talk about that so much because addiction is something nice to talk about, but very hard to fight against.
Yeah, absolutely. Very hard.
Time is flying and we have no more of time. So thank you, Brother Muzaffar, and thank you, all the listeners.
Yeah, I think that's enough. We don't have any more time to discuss this, inshallah. We could go on discussing it, but maybe another time. From myself, from Sister Asma, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Zionist regime's medical blockade of Gaza has been described as one that gravely breaches residents' rights to healthcare in Gaza and outside. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote in this regard, Mahdi Amer, 35, lost his father at the beginning of the new year. Ibrahim Amer was 65. He had a heart attack. But due to the Zionist regime's blockade of Gaza, the emergency equipment he needed and that could have saved him was simply not available in Gaza. Mahdi said, my father suffered from a blockage in each of his four arteries, resulting in a sudden heart attack. Because there was no interventional catheterization device that could save my father, he was referred for treatment. An attempt was made to have him transported to a West Bank hospital, but it came too late. With all the bureaucracy involved in getting an exit permit from the Zionist regime military and the time spent traveling, Ibrahim didn't make it in time. He returned to Gaza in a burial shroud. For over a year, according to Gaza's Ministry of Health, the Zionist regime has prevented medical diagnostic devices, critical equipment, such as mobile and standard X-ray machines, as well as spare parts of such machines, from entering Gaza, along with a host of medicines and other medical equipment barred from entry. The Zionist regime's blockade has left Gaza's health sector dramatically undersupplied and in a constant state of crisis. This, in spite of clear international guidelines and rules under the Geneva Conventions and other international agreements that the right to healthcare must be preserved in times of war. Cancer patients are particularly vulnerable to the lack of access to X-ray machines. That ability to track the spread of cancer is crucial to combating the disease, and even if hard-to-obtain travel permits, travel costs are exorbitant, said Subhia Skake, 55. Despite all of this, SCAIC is hopeful that the health crisis will be resolved and we will have access to every possible course of treatment. Some private health centers do have X-ray or magnetic resonance imaging MRI machines. The one that at Gaza's main Ashifa hospital is often broken due to the inability to import spare parts, but the cost of using them is often prohibitive in Gaza, where the average daily wage is only $10. Khaled Asayat, 30, had an accident that led to serious fractures in his feet and back. "When I went to the hospital, their X-ray machine was out of order," he said. Asayat was able to pay $60 for a scan at a private health center, but now he needs an MRI. He said, "The hospital told me that hundreds of patients were waiting for their turn and my appointment is not for a month. Medical professionals are helpless. All of our hospital units are suffering due to the limited access to medical devices," Muhammad Abu Salmiya, director of Ashifa Hospital, said, adding, "These are life-saving equipment for our patients, many of whom ultimately die because we cannot treat them properly." Abu Salmiya lamented the lack of interventional radiology equipment that he needs and the insufficient worn-out equipment he is forced to work with. "We use a very old device for interventional radiology that we urgently need to replace. Patients have to be transferred to West Bank hospitals, but there are several cases where they have died from not receiving medical intervention quickly enough," he said. "There should be 6 X-ray machines at Ashifa Hospital. There are only 2, he said, adding, "We are often compelled to move a patient from the intensive care unit to a different floor, often while they are connected to oxygen, in order to take an X-ray. This is unhealthy." Compounding frustrations, health professionals say there is no reason for the Zionist regime to prevent these devices and spare parts for their repair from entering Gaza. Many are donations. Ibrahim Abbas, director of the Medical Imaging Unit at the Ministry of Health in Gaza, pointed out, citing the example of 14 devices blocked from entry in October 2021, all donated by the Palestinian Economic Council for Development and Reconstruction, PECDAR. "These imaging devices still sit in storage, awaiting permission to enter," Abbas said. Fazel Al-Muzaini of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, PCHR, said the Zionist regime had to honor its obligations under international law. "The Oslo agreements and the resulting transfer of the tasks of providing health services to the Palestinian Authority do not exempt the Israeli occupation from its obligations to facilitating healthcare in the Palestinian territories." According to Al-Muzaini, over 13,500 patients in Gaza are currently waiting to undergo surgery, major and minor. A number the health sector is simply too under-equipped to deal with. PCHR works alongside other human rights organizations to provide legal and logistical support for official Palestinian agencies to facilitate the supply of medical devices. Sometimes these efforts succeed, but not enough to mitigate the life-threatening restrictions the Zionist regime imposes on the Gaza Strip. Al-Muzaini said, "The primary responsibility for providing medical supplies to the residents of Gaza Strip rests with the Zionist regime occupation authorities."
This is A to Z. an introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-building. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of self-building in the Islamic lifestyle. It is important that a Muslim must know about himself. He should have the knowledge about himself. And after that, he must analyze himself. And after that, he should strive for the self-building or the self-spiritual building. He must purify himself. He must purify himself so that he can get to the perfection. On the other hand, when we look at the Islamic teachings, Allah also has said in the Quran, لَقَدْ مَنَّ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Allah has blessed people. He had gave the favor to the people, or to the mu'mineen, إِذْ بَعْثَ فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا, that he has raised a messenger from themselves. What to do in order to read the book for them? In order to read the verses, yatlu alayhim ayati. This is the first step. The second step, Allah says, wa yuzakkihim, and to purify them so that they can have the self-building. The third step is wa yuallimuhum alkitab, and to teach them the knowledge of the book, wal hikmah, and the wisdom. Therefore, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us the favor that He has raised messengers from ourselves. Those messengers who are taking us towards the perfection. Therefore, in order to have the best Islamic lifestyle, it is necessary to purify ourselves. It is necessary to strive for the self-building. It is necessary to have this spiritual self-building so that we can achieve the perfection in its true meanings. And we cannot achieve this unless we do not follow the book of God. Unless we do not follow the footsteps of the messengers of God, which He raised from ourselves for our guidance. Therefore, it is necessary in the self-building to follow the footsteps of the Prophet and to follow the verses of the Quran, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of self-building in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran has said that He has raised messengers from our own selves so that, number one, they do yatlu alayhim ayati. So we can see that the first step or the first orders for the messengers were to read the verses for the people, to acknowledge people or to tell people about the signs and the verses of God. Therefore, if as a Muslim I want to have a self-building, the first thing that I need to do is yatlu ayat. I need to read the verses of Quran. I need to read the verses of the Quran to know that this book of guidance, what does it say? The second step for the prophets and the messengers were وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ. They used to purify people. After reading the verses, when people knew about the orders of God, then they used to purify them. They used to call them towards the purification. And this is what we need to do. When we read the verses of the book, we know about the halal and haram. We know what things are allowable and what things are forbidden in Islam. Therefore, I will perform the allowable things. I will enjoy the allowable things and I will avoid the forbidden things. So this is in the Quran, yatlu alayhim. When I read the verses of the Quran, I know about it. And then I can purify myself by avoiding every single evil and by adorning myself with all the goodness. And after that, the next step is when I purified myself, yuallimuhumul kitaba wal hikmah. This is the next step, that when someone is purified, then the knowledge of book and the wisdom is been given to him as it was given to the prophets, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. To our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The new Zionist regime's government has started a new wave of violent attacks against Palestinians since the beginning of 2023. Also, Zionist settlers, encouraged by the far-right Zionist government of Netanyahu, have intensified their attacks against innocent Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Present International noted, living up to their murderous nature, Zionist occupiers massacred in cold blood 10 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on January 26th. Among those shot and killed was a 60-year-old Palestinian grandmother, Magda Obeid. She was shot in the neck. The Palestinian Health Ministry said Sa'eb Esam Mahmoud, Israeli, 24, and Ezzedine Yassin Salaha, 26, were also killed in the early morning of the Zionist regime's assault on Jenin. Another 20 Palestinians were wounded. Four of them were reported to be in critical condition. The Zionist assault on the refugee camp was carried out using a ruse. Heavily armed troops entered the camp riding in a commercial truck to hide their identity. As they entered the camp, the Zionists opened fire on residents who realized what was going on and attempted to block their entry. Several other army vehicles, including bulldozers, followed the commercial vehicle and attacked a building used as a meeting place for residents. Quoting Anas Hawaisha, a Palestinian correspondent at a local channel in Jenin, the Middle East Eye reported the sounds of bullets and gunfights were intense and clouds of smoke covered the sky. The Israeli occupation cut off the electricity, the internet, and the cell phone network during the storming. This shows that it was planned. The Zionists entered Jenin near the area of Jorat al-Hab. When the Palestinians discovered that the Israelis were attacking, they sounded the alarm to alert their residents of the camp. There was an exchange of fire between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli troops, and then more forces were pushed into the camp, Huwaisha said, adding, tens of military vehicles laid a siege around the area. True to their lying nature, the Zionists claimed they were targeting fighters who, according to their intelligence reports, were planning attacks. The Zionist occupiers have seldom needed any excuse to murder innocent Palestinians. After all, at least 29 Palestinians have already been murdered this month. This murder rate surpasses even the horrendously high figures for 2022, when more than 250 Palestinians were murdered by the occupation forces. And why did the occupiers prevent Red Crescent medical workers from evacuating the wounded by restricting access to the refugee camp? Palestinian Health Minister Mai Al-Kaleh said that the Israeli regime forces stormed Jenin government hospital and intentionally fired tear gas canisters at the pediatric department in the hospital. Video footage showed the Israeli regime fire tear gas, choking women and children inside the pediatric department. Were these women and children also planning to attack the Zionist murderers? Ever since the new fascist cabinet has taken charge, led by the indicted criminal Benjamin Netanyahu, attacks on Palestinians have escalated. Such notorious terrorists as Itamar Ben-Gvir, Bezalel Smotrich, Avi Moz, and Yariv Levin in the Israeli regime cabinet have vowed to kill more Palestinians. Zionist criminals established their credentials by killing and maiming Palestinians. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported hardcore Israeli settler fanatics on January 29th set on fire a house and parked a vehicle after sneaking into the town of Tormuz Aya to the northeast of Ramallah in the occupied West Bank, according to local sources. Awad Abu Samra, a resident of the town, told Wafa that the group of settlers backed by army militias sneaked into the town in the middle of the night before they set a parked vehicle on fire, completely destroying it and setting fire to the house of Mr. Odeh Jabara, a local Palestinian resident, causing partial damage to the external walls of the house. Meantime, groups of Zionist settlers stormed the nearby village of Duma and shattered at least one vehicle. The settlers also shattered the windows of a house in the village. These attacks are part of an ongoing wave of unabated settler violence encouraged by the new far-right Israeli regime government of Netanyahu and with incitement from his ultra-nationalist cabinet ministers Itamar Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. Also, Wafa reported Israeli regime forces stole artifacts from the village of Sebastia, north of the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Local sources said Mohammad Azam, head of the Sebastia municipality, said that the Zionist regime forces stole artifacts from the archaeological sites in the village. He added that the forces have been surrounding staff from the municipality and the Ministry of Tourism for hours.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. Mothers are a foundation for transferring the elements of national identity. National identity is something important. This is about the identity of a nation and a nation's character. This is primarily transferred by mothers. Things such as language, habits, manners, traditions, good morals, and good habits. All of these are primarily passed on by mothers. Fathers are also influential, but much less so than mothers. A mother has the greatest impact. She is the one who sprinkles the seeds of faith in hearts. It is mothers who raise children to be believers. Faith is not a subject to be taught or learned. Faith is something that grows. It is a spiritual growth that must be planted. It is the mothers who plant the seeds for it. The same goes for ethics. So a mother plays quite an extraordinary role. Now these two roles are important. I have said this many times already and it is something that I believe. These things are the main most important duties of a woman.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One of the women here announced that she is a housewife. Well, that's very good. According to Islam, the main role of a woman is her role as a housewife. However, what's important is that being a housewife does not mean staying at home all the time. Some people make a mistake about this. When we say housewife, they think we mean that you should sit at home and do nothing, that you have no duties, you should not teach, you should not struggle on the path of God. And that you should not get involved in social work or political activities. That is not what being a housewife means. Being a housewife means taking care of your home, and alongside that, you can do any other work that you are able to manage, you are interested in doing, and you are enthusiastic about. However, all of these come after being a housewife. If you are caught in a situation where you have to choose between saving a child's life and working in an office, the child's life comes first. Do you have any doubts about this? No, no woman has any doubt that a child's life comes first.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Latest surveys are indicating that more and more people in Italy are against continuing to send weapons to Kiev and are calling for a peaceful settlement of the conflict in Ukraine. According to a Euromedia poll, over half of Italians, about 52%, oppose supplying Ukraine with modern Western-made weapons, up several percentage points from mid-December. Furthermore, almost 7 out of 10 respondents were also against a possible intervention of NATO in the conflict.
Sending more weapons doesn't make any sense. More arms means more destruction and a never-ending war.
After weeks of doubts, Italy has confirmed it is ready to supply Ukraine with its highly costly SAMP/T air defense system. Italy only has 5 SAMP/T batteries, which has led to concerns over the weakening of the country's defense capability. Also, other polls show a growing opposition among Italians to an even more active role by the Giorgia Meloni government in the conflict. According to a survey commissioned by the state broadcaster RAI, an overwhelming majority of Italians, almost 80%, believe that the Ukraine conflict is far away from them. Another survey carried out by market research company SWG has revealed over half of Italian citizens oppose the government's plans to raise defense spending to 2% of GDP by 2028. Doing so would align the country with NATO's desired threshold.
I think that increasing our spending on weapons now is insane. We are already strangled by high inflation, high cost of living. I'm against the government's plan.
Italy counts very little at an international level. I am afraid it would be much more useful to remain inside the current international context and go with the flow.
Italy's next aid and military package to Ukraine is to be announced by the Meloni government in the early days of February. Max Civili, Rome.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced a series of punitive steps against Palestinians in response to Friday's shooting in East Al-Quds. The operation, which was carried out by 21-year-old Khaira Alqam from East Al-Quds, killed 7 Israeli settlers and wounded several others. The steps announced late on Saturday during a meeting of the Israeli cabinet included new moves to expand Jewish settlements. The cabinet, however, has not provided details on how settlements would be expanded. Other measures include granting gun permits to Israelis, a move seen as a green light to Israeli civilians' use of guns against Palestinians.
These are parts of more collective punishment, more aggression and crimes against Palestinians. They are speaking about home demolitions and stripping citizenship of the families of those who carry out such operations from the real owners of the land, and more such moves against the people of Al-Quds.
The cabinet also decided more punishments for the families of those who carry out shooting operations by deciding to demolish their homes. Early on Sunday, Israeli troops raided At-Tur neighborhood where martyr Khaira Alqam came from and sealed up the entrances of his family home in preparation for its demolition. The Israeli cabinet voted to revoke residency and citizenship rights of families of those who carry out shooting operations from Al-Quds and lands occupied in 1948.
The decisions of the Israeli cabinet are only about using much more violence, fierce violence against Palestinian people, and about consolidating the system of racial discrimination and occupation. Their decisions will not change much and will not break the Palestinian resistance. And in my opinion, this government is failing and will continue to fail because fascism cannot prevail. And nobody can break the will of the Palestinian people to struggle to be free.
Friday's operation came only one day after Israeli forces shot dead 9 Palestinians during a raid on a refugee camp in the northern West Bank city of Jenin. That brings to more than 30 the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces since the start of this year. Observers argue that the Israelis themselves should be now worried about the repercussions of the right-wing regime's policies, including the deadly raid on Jenin. They add that the Palestinians won't fear Netanyahu's further restrictions and collective punishment they already are used to under Tel Aviv's occupation. Mona Kandil for Press TV, occupied Ramallah.
Hundreds of angered Muslim protesters converged on the Swedish embassy in London to condemn the recent desecration of Islam's holy book. Protesters came from across the UK in order to make their upset clear and to pressure European governments to take anti-Muslim hate more seriously.
This is the latest example of a protest to take place as anger across the Muslim world remains incredibly high. This week alone, there have been numerous Quran-burning protests and promises by right-wing activists to continue the pressure. As the protests continue, the anger will continue to grow too.
Activists informed Press TV how their love for the Quran compelled them to act.
We live for Quran. The Quran is very respectful. The Holy Quran is not our word, not our book. It's the book from Allah, then has to be very respectful.
This should stop because this is our human right, as well as the European laws, as we are living in European continent. The European law states that every religion and their religious leadership must be respected.
On Monday, a Dutch politician tore apart a copy of the Holy Quran in the city of The Hague. It followed an incident in Sweden where a politician burned a copy of the Quran outside the Turkish embassy. These extremists have been receiving authorities' permission to conduct the heinous acts, even provided police protection under the guise of freedom of expression. Mosques, Muslim-strong residential areas and embassies belonging to Muslim countries have all been the target of these Islamophobic incidents. This blatant state facilitation of anti-Islam extremism has led many Muslims to feel vulnerable in a continent which claims to defend minority and religious rights. Robert Carter, London.
Geomatics is not a well-known term amongst the public, but it's actually the driving force behind many of the daily activities in man's modern life. The second Iran Geo exhibition offers a quick glance into the rapidly growing sector and Iran's latest products in the field.
Geo means earth, and geomatics is a science and technology that deal with the collection, distribution and analysis of geographic data using aerial and satellite imaging. To put it simply, when you take an online cab, you're using a geomatic technology known as GPS, which is short for Global Positioning System.
Geomatics has its traces in almost all economic sectors, from mining to oil and gas. It's used for air navigation services, archaeological excavation, climate change and environmental monitoring, disaster risk reduction, and estimation of crop yields. Over the past decade, an increasing number of tech firms in Iran have expressed interest in geomatics.
We develop aerial imaging and surveying technologies. We also offer geophysical services. Here in this expo, we're showcasing our imaging and surveying drones, which can draw maps and collect topographical data to facilitate mining operations.
As the organizer of the tech event, the Iranian Defense Ministry says it is planning to encourage more companies to operate in geomatics, to turn the strategic